Howdy neighbors, and welcome to another edition of your Ag Perspectives podcast, a special edition from Denver, Colorado, as we're in the summer cattle industry business meeting mode this week. And we had at the opening general session of this meeting an opportunity to hear the presentation of Randy Block, the top hired hand of the Cattle Facts organization, the market analysis arm for the cattle industry. Wanted to share that set of comments with you today. Randy looks at the cattle market, the corn market, the African swine fever situation, and more, and gives the folks there gathered in Denver a little bit of perspective of what Cattle Facts is thinking right now about the cattle market and what's happening the balance of this year.
For those of you, think back to the update that we provided to you back in the end of January at the National Convention. Dr. Douglas shared with us all at that time that we were going to be wet, and we were wet, weren't we? He was pretty well right on the money, and I think for those of you across the grazing country out here, this gives you a pretty good perspective. Since 1995, as we look at pasture and range conditions across the United States, they've never been better. So we've got a lot of cattle out. We've got a lot of cattle that are grazing. Our cow-calf operations in most areas are in pretty good shape. There are some dry pockets. We've had a little more drought dry areas that have started to show up in some of the areas in the northwest, some of the areas in the southwest, and on into the South Central Plains, but in general in very, very good shape. Our hay supplies, our hay crop, our stocks numbers are down. We've all seen elevated hay prices in here over the course of the last 6 months or so. I think with all the water we've had, the hay quality's been down a little bit because we had so much feed that's gotten wet. But I think we'll see that change in here. We'll likely see these hay prices soften up in here during the second half of the summer going into the fall. When we think about the corn situation that we've got out here, we got a lot of uncertainty, don't we? Again, we were so wet we couldn't get the crop in the ground. We are not going to know until the August 12th crop report that comes out how many acres we've got. And I would tell you that there's a lot of pretty good analysts out there, and I would tell you the range around the acreage number, there's at least a 5 to 6 million acre uncertainty around that number. The government gave us a number here a few weeks ago that was 91.7 million acres, and there's some folks that think that number could be as small as 85 million acres. So we really aren't going to know. Again, you look at where we are, we've got a lot of uncertainty around that. We've got a lot of yield variation. When we're as wet as we are, the loss of the number of acres that we did, the flooding, we're likely going to end up with a yield that's well below trend line yield, and somewhere back in here in the lower 60s would be my guess. Our production numbers and global stocks, obviously we've got large stocks of corn available today. So we've got about 2.3 billion bushels of corn in carryover out of the United States. But maybe more importantly, if you're comparing back to the time period in here in 2012, 2013, when we came out of that drought, we only had a global stocks number of about 12 to 13%. We've got a global stocks situation today that is 26 to 29%. So we aren't anywhere near the big a predicament that we were back in here the earlier part of the decade relative to our U.S. and global corn supplies. There's a lot of wheat that's going into rations. I would say well over half the feed yards in the central and southern plains of the United States have moved wheat into the ration because, quite honestly, it's a very good value and it's a very good feed if they're set up to handle it. So corn exports are going to end up being lower. We're also going to end up with a little more wheat usage and a little less corn usage when it's all said and done. Corn will end up being a little bit higher, but we don't think it's going to be a situation that we're going to go to $5 and $6 corn and stay at anything like that. I think we're going to end up with corn having plenty of crop when it's all said and done. When we think about where we are in the cattle markets, what we've been sharing with you over the course of the last year is that the cattle inventory cycle was slowing down. The growth cycle was slowing down, and we were nearing a time in here where we'd expect that we'd be at our biggest numbers in here basically by 2020. We haven't changed our thoughts. The government came out with their inventory numbers in here a week ago. You can see if their red numbers were down a little bit. The beef cow number was flat. The dairy cow number was down just a little bit. For all practical purposes, the expansion cycle is pretty well winding down. We still think when it's all said and done, when you get your January report out, you're still going to have a beef cow number that's still a little bit bigger. Still up another 100,000 head compared to where it was a year ago. So we basically have taken the cow herd from 29 million back to, for all practical purposes, 32 million head. That's what we thought we would do 5 years ago when the expansion started. We thought we'd go right back to 32 million head and we'd flatten out there. Because the reason we were telling you that is we had the demand to support that level of cow herd. And I think we've seen in here over the last several years, the last few years in particular, we definitely have had the demand to support that. Now, we've got big numbers of cattle in these feed yards. We've got record cattle on feed numbers. We have basically all year long. But over the last several months, you can see I'm comparing this year over year. On July 1, we still had record on feed numbers. When we have those kind of on feed numbers, we're going to have large fed cattle marketings, aren't we? So this year, if you look back and you see where our fed cattle marketings are, we've been very seasonal, but we've been harvesting more cattle than we did a year ago. Year to date, we've harvested 226,000 more head of fed cattle than a year ago. A 40-hour harvest week now is 485,000 head. For the last 18 months, we've been telling you that was 480,000 head. So we've been creeping a few more animals out, been running these plants at a very high efficiency, and we're still harvesting, as you can see, we're still harvesting basically 50 to 60,000 on Saturdays. So we're running these plants at pretty well max capacity, and we've needed to. We've needed to, and we're going to continue to need to do that, as you can see, as you look at the black dotted line through the rest of the year. We really don't have much slowdown coming, do we? A little seasonal slowdown, but we're going to be running these plants. We're going to be testing it all the way through here. So, again, I think the industry's done a very good job of being able to harvest the numbers we've put through these plants. And we've done a pretty good job of keeping these front-end supplies current, which I think is a positive situation for us year-to-date. Now, you look at our production numbers. Again, look at the text box up there at the top. We've got 13 million fewer beef cows than we did in the season, and we've got record beef production. 13 million fewer beef cows and record beef production this year. And you can see where the red bars are in 20 and 21. We've got bigger production coming. So we won't see our peak in production in our estimates until we get to 2021 in all likelihood. So we got a lot of product coming at us, and obviously we're seeing the same thing on the pork and poultry side, and we'll get into that in a little more detail in just a second. The thing, though, I think has really been a great story for our industry is this: the change in the quality and what that's meant to us from a demand standpoint. We've seen a 50% increase in the production of prime and choice production. And if you look in here, 80% of our fed cattle this year will grade primer choice. That's just absolutely incredible when you think about where we were just 10 years ago to see these kind of moves and how the consumers have responded to this. Look out here today. We got a choice select spread that's on top of $20 today. We got a prime to choice spread, even with this kind of production, that's on top of $20 today. So the market is demanding this higher quality product. It hasn't backed away from it, and you're getting paid for that as producer. I think it's a great, great story, and it's been one of the reasons, as I said, that we've seen demand improve the way it has over the course of the last several years. Now, when we look at what's going on with the consumer, you see with the median household incomes and the consistent increases, 5%, 3%, 2%, this year, we think we're going to be up between 2 and 3% again. The bottom line with this is we've seen a $60 billion increase in spending. Total spending on an annual basis has increased $60 billion since the demand low in 1998. So if we were looking at that from a per capita expenditure standpoint, it's basically doubled. Beef demand has grown tremendously. I'm showing you $60 billion in the beef industry in that 20-year time period. Pork and poultry spending combined increased $53 billion. 53 for those two proteins, beef by itself was up 60. Again, the beef industry took 7% market share away from pork and poultry, market share of spending. We don't have to be the biggest producer. We're not going to be the biggest producer. I'm glad we got off that train years and years ago because it could have broke us. But we need to be the highest quality protein provider out there with the most taste and all the other attributes that our product has. And I think our industry has figured that out, and we're rewarding producers. Now, this is a little bit of a tidbit, but I think it's really interesting to step back and put it in perspective. We always hear this, well, beef is so high. Well, not necessarily so. Look at what we've got here. The average consumer works 12 minutes to afford 1 pound of beef, of choice beef. That's a bargain, isn't it? And again, if we break some of this stuff down into bite-sized pieces, there's some real nuggets in here. Again, it puts in perspective where we really are from an industry and that we are affordable as a protein choice out here. Now, to keep us moving in here, we need to spend a little bit of time on the global landscape. This is a situation we have in here when we look at the global marketplace. I think most of you in the room realize that the U.S. is the number one producer of both beef and poultry, and we're the number three producer of pork in the world. Well, we all know what's going on in China, don't we? That big red bar. I'm going to walk you into swine fever here in just a minute. But I think the thing that's important for you to understand why I'm showing you this chart, why this is a big deal. China has 50% of the world's hogs. That 50% of that pork production, what we see in China, it represents 20% of global meat production. That's why this swine fever is such a big deal. It's 20% of global meat supply. So as we look at this data, we'll go into a little more detail here in just a minute as we really roll up our sleeves and look at the potential ramifications of that. I think this is a good perspective for each and every one of us in the room. What are we doing? What are we doing when we sit out here and we think about our contribution into the total meat supply? Again, if you look at it since 1970, total meat supplies have increased 60 billion pounds. That's 1.2 billion pounds a year. Do the same math since 1990. Total meat production is increasing 1.5 billion pounds per year. Why is it increasing more rapidly since 1990 forward? Because we have become much more of a global marketplace, and we're exporting a higher percentage of that total supply than we were. We weren't exporting much meat in total in the 70s and 80s. That really started to change as we got into the 90s, and especially into the 2000s forward, hadn't it? So that's why you're seeing it. Again, remember, only 4% of the world's population lives in the United States. And there's a lot of people that want our high-quality protein, not just beef, but pork and poultry around the world. So the growth that we've seen in those other proteins has been significant. And again, when you step back and you look at the growth in exports that have gone side by side with this, again, look at 1990 when you look at the chart. We're exporting basically 2 billion pounds of protein in total in 1990. And we're going to export between 17 and 18 billion pounds this year. A simple way to remember that, 25% of the pork we produce is exported. just shy of 20% of the poultry produced is exported. 14% of the beef and beef byproducts is exported. That's a lot. But those quantities, we look at these numbers, if we were having to absorb that in our domestic marketplace, it's another 45 pounds of protein per person. That's a simple way for you to understand the impact that this has on our overall business. Now, it all comes back to money. Does it make sense? $350 a head, over 20% of the value of every fed steer and heifer in this country is generated out of the export market. Look at the hog situation. We're talking about $50 a hog, between $50 and $55 a pig is generated out of these export markets. So again, we're talking about swine fever out here. One thing you need to keep in mind is, what if we were to get it here? How does that change things? Okay? Again, we're seeing it spread throughout China. We've seen it move into the EU and some of the further reaches of the EU. These are things that you have to be recognized as potential risk. Now look at these consumption numbers. We hear all this stuff out here that, hey, the new consumers, they're not eating as much meat. They're not eating as much. Well, somebody is. We basically are record large meat consumption. 2019, we're going to be at about 218 to 219 pounds. That's as big as we've been any time in history. You can see in 2020, we believe that number will be record large in 2020. So it is extremely important that the NCBA DC staff continues to work to get further access to where we can get more of these markets reopened. We can get broader access. I'm sure Colin will talk about some of those things. But again, we need to have more outlets, not just for beef, but we need to have more outlets for pork and poultry as well as we look down the road. The China situation, as we roll up our sleeves and look at this, again, it's the official numbers that are coming out of China is that we've got 20 to 25% of the Chinese hog population has been lost. That number could be twice that much. Again, it wouldn't surprise us if that number is really closer to 40 or 45%. There's a lot of private estimates that would put that number close to that level. It's a lot of protein. The thing that I think is important for all of you to recognize is that there's not enough pork in the world to fill that gap. This is a major pork gap. There's not enough protein or enough pork protein to fill that gap that's going to be created in China. So they're going to have to look at alternatives. The first place we believe they will look is with poultry because of the price point. Price point and how fast you can get it to market. You can fill that void much quicker with something you can get to market in several weeks as opposed to 30 months if we're looking at a beef product. So keep that in mind. Again, we think poultry will be a major beneficiary of this when it's all said and done. The pork situation, again, you're starting to see Chinese hog prices move higher. You're seeing hog prices around the globe move higher. But we're not seeing a lot of that lift in here in the U.S. yet. We're not seeing a big increase in the export activity out of the U.S. Part of it is because we don't have access from a beef standpoint to, in a large degree, for our conventional product here. We don't have access for fresh poultry either, do we? So we may be a ways away before we're really able to share in some of this that's being created, but at some point down the road, I believe we'll see that happen. This is what's going on with China beef, pork, and broiler imports. Not from the U.S., this is from all suppliers around the globe. Again, that shortage is starting to show up. They're starting to look for alternatives to put more product into that market to help fill the void. The Chinese had a lot of cold storage available. They put a lot of product there, domestic supplies into cold storage. As they work through that domestic supply over there, I'm certain that we're going to trade swine fever several times in here. Remember, we traded this clear back last August and September. We had a big spike in the markets. We turned around in March and April. We had another big spike in the markets. The hog market went up $25 a hundred from about March 5th to March 22nd. And then it softened up again. We took it all out. So look for a lot of volatility to continue as a result of what's happening in that particular part of the world. These are the things, though, I want you to think about. What if we were to get swine fever in the U.S.? Stop movement order, exports would close. Remember, what percentage of the total pork production in the United States is exported? Now, this is as the source on this is Dr. Plyburn. Again, this is data that was, these are their thoughts coming out of the pork producers. You see what's gone on in here. Again, if they close, we got a lot of protein we've got to absorb. That's a massive increase. Remember, swine fever doesn't have any impact on humans. But you think everybody will believe that? We've probably seen the same thing happen in China. You know, I think there's estimates out there that Chinese pork demand has probably declined more than 20% as a result of the fear. Well, when you lie to your people as many times as they have over time, they don't tend to trust the government. So that's been part of the trade-off over there, is in the short term you've created less demand as a result of that. We'd likely see some of that in our markets as well. So keep this in mind. This is the downside of it. We don't know how it's going to shake out in here, but you need to understand that the disease is spreading, and this is certainly something that you need to be aware of as we move forward. So let me just put a bow around this relative to where we are with this situation. We're going to have record large pork production in the United States this year. U.S. pork production is going to be up about 4%. Poultry production will be record large in the United States. It'll be up 2 to 3%. Beef production in the United States will be record large this year. We'll be up 1.5 to 2%. We will have record supplies of protein. Exports, if you look at where our exports are, beef exports are going to have to hurry to be even for the year. We're off to such a slow start. We're really not getting a lot of traction relative to a year ago, but keep in mind, we're comparing that to We've got several years in here where we were looking at double-digit increases in export activity. So keep that in mind. We're still looking at beef exports being somewhere around 3.2. That'll be fairly close, 3.2 billion pounds this year, so it'll be a very, very significant number. Pork exports, we think they'll end up being up 10% for the year. Poultry exports, we believe they'll end up being up about 4% for the year. And most of those increases that we're alluding to on those proteins will happen during the second half of the year. So that'll be a little more help to us in here in the second half of the year to help move through some of these bigger supplies of protein that we've got coming at us. From a fed cattle market standpoint, we've been pretty range-bound in here over the course of the last 3 years. We've been pretty flat in here in this $1.05 to $1.30. We haven't spent much time above $1.30 a couple of weeks back in here in the spring of 2017. Very little time below $1.05. Again, I think we've got cyclical price risk as we go into these bigger production numbers here over the next couple of years, but the highs will likely be a little bit lower and the lows will be a little bit lower. I think we'll ease this down a little bit in 2020 and 2021, but again, I don't see anything unless we get into a major recession that's going to be real serious here. From a market standpoint, we still have an issue that is brewing out here that we all need to be aware of. We continue to have times where we have a very thin cash market. Price discovery is key, isn't it? Again, that's where a lot of these things really harbor from, and I think if you come back and you see what's happening this year, Again, it's not so much that it's 22% of a much bigger number than it was 4 or 5 years ago, but we still have weeks that we don't have a lot of cash activity. And I think it's something that this needs to continue to be on our radar screens as we look at price discovery down the road. And are we going to be able to continue to do a good job of really finding value in these markets? So just be aware of that. For cow-calf producers out here, again, what I'm showing you is the last basically 3 years cow-calf prices. We basically averaged $1.70 on 5.5 weight calves. This is U.S. average. Averaged $1.70 for basically 3 years. They're a little bit softer on calves that are selling for fall this year. I was just looking at a rundown on the videos. We're averaging between $10 and $15 a hundred softer on calf prices this year compared to a year ago. Again, that makes sense when you think about the fed cattle market being a little bit softer, but the big change has been grain prices, hasn't it? With this big run in grain prices, the elevated cost of gains, again, you're likely going to see a little bit of that. The average break-even line that you see down there at 135 to 140, we're still well above that. But again, we want to see this segment of the industry continue to be profitable as we go forward. When I talk about the demand growth that we've experienced in the industry, this is really the result of the demand growth. This is where it all comes together. You know, all the other stuff we talk about means nothing if our industry isn't profitable. If we're not profitable, we're not sustainable. We weren't sustainable in the 80s and 90s. We weren't making enough money to buy lunch. We had a $50 bill to spread between all of us, whether we were producers, stocker operators, cattle feeders, packers, feeders. $50 to $75 to try to support the entire industry. It's no wonder we lost 400,000 producers as we came through that time period. This has been a significant change. This is the measuring stick. Look at the change in profitability we're experiencing in the industry. No, not everybody's getting the same amount. Obviously, the packing segment's having a great year right now. They'll continue to have. The feeding industry, the cattle feeder, today isn't making very much money. We're just kind of pushing, but we're running hotels that are full, aren't we? The hotels are full. The hotel business is making good money. Stocker operators have been profitable, and obviously, as I just said, our cow-calf producers have been profitable. We really haven't had any losses from our cow-calf producers in here over the last 15 to 20 years. So we'll test that in here as we get into the cycle lows and 2021, but I do believe we're going to stay profitable as we come through here. So the bottom line, I think, when you roll this data up, is swine fever is what we really need to be aware of. There is going to be a protein shortage around the globe as this thing unfolds. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's very unpredictable how long this will last. I would say at least a couple of more years that we're going to be talking about this. But just be aware of it. We're going to have big starts and we're going to have big stops. All you have to do is look at what we've seen here over the last year now since we've been trading it. But don't go to sleep on it. Again, as I mentioned, we've got some price risk as we go into the latter part of the this decade and on into the early part of the decade. I think our biggest risk in here is an economic slowdown. A recession. A recession could cost us spending. It could have some pretty serious ramifications for us, and we're probably getting long overdue for that. So I think you need to have that on your radar screen as we move into 2020, 2021 possibly. Those are things that we've had one of the longest expansion cycles in history as we're going through here. We've got record production numbers that we're dealing with. Again, we've got strong exports, increased market access, as we talked about earlier, is certainly very, very important to us as we move down the road. As I transition, I want to show you a couple of more slides here. This is a situation that we have with the change in our demographics in our marketplace today. The left-hand bar is a reflection of the millennials. The next bar is Generation Xers. The third from the right is the baby boomers. And this is where people are spending their money. And if you focus in here on the top red bar, that's restaurant spending. That's millennials and restaurant spending. Nearly 25% of the total spending is being generated there. That means they've got a major voice, a major influence at what goes on those menus, don't they? Obviously, there's steak in here in the grocery store. If we're thinking about millennials and that impact, has grown substantially. So we have to respond. We have to respond. We have to make sure we're being focusing more and more products, and we're doing the things that Nathan talked about, producing products that we can stand behind. We can stand behind with the promise in here that it was raised right, is humanly raised, all of those things that we all take to heart and do our very best on day in and day out. These things that I think as you look at where we are out here today with the fake meat agenda, this has created a lot of emotion in the market. Quite honestly, in the last 10 years, with the exception of some of the other market issues, I've had more calls on this than anything in the last 10 years. This has really got people's wound up. And again, the question is, how much market share are we going to lose here? How much potential market share are we going to lose as the beef industry? Again, I think you need to expect that we will lose some. When you think about all this population estimates around the world, the question is, who's going to feed all these people if these population estimates are accurate? I don't believe we'll be able to raise enough meat protein to feed all of the folks if these population estimates are accurate. So I think we have to keep that in mind in this whole conversation. But again, I think Colin and Elisa will talk about this and what the trade associations are doing to protect our markets as we look down the road. With that, I'll look forward to taking some additional questions after the session's finished. I'll be in the back of the room and look forward to taking any of the questions from you. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Randy.